It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station. And you can call us with your questions, not only that 800 number, but our local numbers, 353-4674 and 247-7282. And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to talk about elder law a little bit more. This is going to be our last program. We've talked about it past 2 or 3 weeks, mm-hmm. So this will be our last in a series of elder law and asset protection. Mm-hmm. And next week we'll start a new series and talk about homeowners associations, planned community act.
Those are always fun.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a lot of cases in the trial court level and court of appeals right now dealing with the planned community act. So. Mm-hmm. You know, that's on the tip of my tongue right now. So we'll talk a little bit about that starting next week.
Okay. All right. So where do we want to start with this one today?
Well, Ben, what we have covered is that, you know, our listeners know that if they have an elder parent, elder grandparents, uncle or aunt, anyone in their family that they're a bit concerned about, then as we've just said so many times on this program, it's critical that we kind of get proactive, look ahead, and do some planning. That planning all begins with a well-drafted and very specifically tailored durable power of attorney, mm-hmm. not a short-form power of attorney, but a power of attorney that has pretty extensive language to allow the agent under the power of attorney to make certain transfers, certain gifts, to make applications, if you will, for Medicaid, mm-hmm. to sign Medicaid documents such as intent to return home, anything having to do with qualifying their loved one for Medicaid. One of the things that we always do in these files, in addition to planning with the power of attorney, is usually we create a trust to place the home place mm-hmm. In a trust so that it is, or any other real property that the loved one might own, so as to protect it from any kind of lien recovery mm-hmm. Should their loved one qualify for Medicaid and receive Medicaid benefits. In the state of North Carolina, if you receive Medicaid benefits after you qualify, then the Department of Medical Assistance in Raleigh is going to keep a tab on that, Ben.
Right.
And they're going to be pretty accurate about what they have advanced to the recipient throughout their lifetime. And then when they are no longer living, when there is a certificate of death on record, mm-hmm. they, of course, then are able to look into the estate.
Mm-hmm.
And seek to recover, seek to be reimbursed mm-hmm. for what they paid during the life of the recipient. And so the way in which assets are titled and whether or not they are in or out of the estate is critically important in a file such as this, mm-hmm. because anything within the estate up to the amount of $5,000 is going to be looked at and is going to be subject to lien recovery mm-hmm. by the Department of Medical Assistance, who in effect, the strong arm, if you will, of that agency, as one would, of course, know in the state of North Carolina, is the state attorney general's office and mm-hmm. the assistant attorney generals and the lawyers for the state of North Carolina.
Right. Now, is that different when you're talking about putting this property or in a trust when you're looking to qualify for Medicaid? Does it change when you have a spouse that's still living in the home? Does that change?
It does. The lien recovery rights are limited in the event that the community spouse is still living mm-hmm. in the event, you know, of the death of the applicant. Mm-hmm. So they're not as extensive as though, you know, under the situation where you have just the applicant who's receiving the Medicaid and maybe right. you have maybe the children who are living in the home or someone else is living in the home. The spouse is living there, then those lien rights are limited. Hmm. Now, where this really comes up, and I see this pretty often, and anyone out there who knows that a family member or friend or someone that they know has qualified for Medicaid benefits by signing an intent to return home mm-hmm. should really listen to the next 3 or 4 minutes of the program. This intent to return home is specifically carved out in our Medicaid rules mm-hmm. in North Carolina. And what the intent to return home basically says is that if you sign a document or your attorney in fact signs a document indicating that it is my intent to return home, and that's all it has to say.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to go into whether they can go home, whether there's the medical possibility that they would ever be able to get out of the facility. But in the event that this document is signed, it's in the Medicaid file, then the home will be an exempt asset. Mm-hmm. Medicaid is not going to count the home place at that point in time. So I've had over the years many clients who have, you know, kind of been lulled to sleep as it relates to that because mm-hmm. they feel as though, hey, we got it. We're approved.
Right.
We don't have to be concerned about this $5,000 a month anymore because we're qualified.
But the numbers are still adding up.
And then time goes on, time goes on, time goes on. The mm-hmm. person is in the facility. The person passes away. And then comes the Division of Medical Assistance letter
mm-hmm.
and the lien recovery. So anyone out there who has been qualified for adult Medicaid services because of signing an intent to return home needs to know that there's really a second step to that process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Division of Medical Assistance and DSS, I mean, they're limited as to what they can tell you about that because they're not attorneys. They mm-hmm. don't want to
sure.
get into an unauthorized practice of law. And we have, excellent social workers here, excellent workers at DSS, but their hands are tied to a certain degree with regard to that. What those folks need to know is that, as Cecil was just saying, if you protected the home through the use of intent to return home,
mm-hmm.
Then the home is still there in the event that we receive Medicaid and then pass away for lien recovery purposes, unless you then go to a good elder law attorney who can then structure the ownership of the home so as to avoid that lien.
Right. Now, if a person does return home, I mean, often they return home under hospice care, just
sure.
Maybe for a short period of time. Does that make a difference?
Well, it makes a difference because they don't need the services anymore.
Right.
Okay. So it may be that they're not in the, obviously in the facility anymore. They're not having to pay the $5,000
a month. But the tab is still running.
The tab is still there. And it may be something that we have to deal with at a later date.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we see that quite often,
mm-hmm.
Where folks come in, they sit down, they say, well, mom or dad or whomever it is qualified for Medicaid, has been on Medicaid for a period of time, and the home, they didn't count the home, and we find out there was an intent to return home that was signed, and that's kind of a ticking time bomb for them
mm-hmm.
because they think everything is in order.
Right.
But it's really not in order.
Right.
We're close. We almost have everything done that needs to be done at that point in time because obviously the other assets have been taken care of, by some way. But nevertheless, that is, a planning technique that needs to, people need to follow through on and mm-hmm. finish that. Otherwise they could have an unintended consequence at the end.
If you have questions, you'd like to reach us at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. You can join us right now on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and be happy to try to tackle your question or your experience in this area of elder law and asset protection or any other matter of civil litigation we'll talk about as well, too. 800-818-2255, and we'll have more in a moment. Hey, welcome back to the program here on Coastal Daybreak. Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law on the web at harvellandcollins.com where you can listen to past shows. And we have Barbara on the line with a question, too. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Good morning. Hi, how are you?
Fine.
My question, I came in late, so I was just a little confused with the document of intent to return home. If you already have a trust set up, should you have the document intent to return home or should you not?
Well, you may or may not have an intent to return home because document as a result of how the person was qualified for Medicaid. In other words, the intent to return home is a Medicaid document. And when one is qualifying, if one owns a home, that is routinely what will be signed so as to so as to make the application approved at that moment in time so that the recipient can receive Medicaid benefits.
Okay. I understand.
But, all right. So that's a good thing. All right. What Wes was saying is that though, however, sets the stage for there to be qualification, as I just said. Now our loved one is qualified because they signed a statement to intend home, intent to return to home. But the Department of Medical Assistance is now keeping a tab and will now look to the estate if for some reason, when our loved one is no longer with us. If the house is in the estate at the time that they then pass on, then that asset is going to be subject to recovery. So really, Barbara, the statement of intent to return home and whether or not the house is in the estate or whether it is in a privately funded trust, one is really an apple and the other is an orange.
Okay.
Now, did that answer the question?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much. I appreciate your taking my call.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you, Barbara. You.
I hope that answered the question. She said that it did.
She said she already had a trust. So.
Yes, she did. But, of course, that doesn't mean, you know, just because one has a trust doesn't mean that the title to the house has been transferred to the trust. And that would be something very much that if we were checking with Barbara, we would very much look at that. Mm-hmm. You know, just having a trust or even having a will.
Mm-hmm.
That pours over assets to a trust, which is a very common thing,
mm-hmm.
but leaving the house in the name of the recipient,
mm-hmm.
mother or father, okay,
right.
Is going to leave that house in the estate.
So it really needs to, the trust needs to actually receive title to the house.
There needs to be a deed recorded,
mm-hmm.
Book and page, where that asset, that real property has been transferred by deed to a trust. The title needs to rest in the trust. Now, Ben, we've talked a whole lot about real estate. And just to conclude here in our last few minutes, the other aspect of these files, of course, is the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Barbara would know, and many of our listeners who have had some experience with this know that you're only able to have
$2,000.
Mm-hmm. And so what happens in files such as this is that all of the assets of mother and dad or granddaddy and grandmother are added together.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an IRA, whether it's life insurance, cash value, whatever it might be. It doesn't matter that the IRA is all in the name of dad,
mm-hmm.
okay, and mom doesn't even have an IRA, and mom is about to qualify. They're going to look at the household liquidity.
Right.
Okay. And they're going to add that up in its entirety, and they're going to split it equally between husband and wife, no mm-hmm. matter how it's titled. Now, again, some files we just have the one parent still living.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do, then they'll look at all of the assets of the one parent. There's nobody at that point to split it with.
What if there are adult children living in the house? Does that matter?
That doesn't matter. These assets belong to the mother and the father or the grandmother and the granddad, and they're going to be looked at 50-50.
Okay. All right.
Okay. After the 50-50 split, the community spouse allowance, which mm-hmm. is a bit over $100,000, okay, is able to be reserved for the community spouse. So if there's $200,000 of assets, $100,000 is allocated to wife, the other $100,000 is allocated to dad,
mm-hmm.
then the wife is going to be able to keep that $100,000 that is allocated to her. Up to that amount.
All right.
Now, that's not the exact amount. As I said, it's a bit over $100,000, but that's a good round number to work with.
Mm-hmm.
The other part that is allocated to the husband, if he's the one qualifying, is going. Medicaid, of course, is going to tell us that we need to spend that down to $2,000. And many people, in fact, do that, and then, of course, then qualify dad. There are certain things, however, that an elder law lawyer or a lawyer with an emphasis in this practice can look at and advise the family as to how that spend down, what things might count under the spend down.
Mm-hmm.
Such things as prepaying the funeral. making any improvement to the home,
mm-hmm.
buying a new vehicle for mm-hmm. the community spouse. Many folks have an older vehicle at this
right.
point,
right.
and they're concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes maybe we can make some improvements, some handicap accessibility or handicap bathroom, so that the loved one can come back and forth and mm-hmm. be able to visit on holidays or other certain times. There are certain very permissible usages or spend-down techniques that we can advise the client to use.
Mm-hmm. But all of that, though, is still... timing is of the essence there, right?
Timing is always a factor in these files.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, again, I think we started out at the very beginning of the program talking about being proactive and getting ahead of the ball here
right.
in terms of just on the planning side.
Okay, we'll wrap it up to talking about asset protection in just a moment. And still time for your call, too, at 800-818-2255. And don't forget to go to the website at harvellandcollins.com, where you can listen to past shows and look at newsletters, get other information as well at harvellandcollins.com. Spell it all out, and we'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back here to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins here on the Talk Station with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And Billy from Emerald Isle is on the line with us now. Hi, Billy. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. Thanks. I hope y'all are.
And how can we help you?
My mother lives in Pitt County. She's 93 years old. She lives by herself most of the time, other than my sister and myself taking care of her. And she lives in the home that belongs to me. We had it switched over from my father's deceased now, and we had the home switched over to my name about 8 or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I have a two-part question. If she has to go into a nursing home, is that house protected because it's in my name? Or what? Now, she does have a lifetime estate to live in the house. Would the home be protected, or if she went into a nursing home, would we have to give that house up?
Right. Billy, that's a good question, and you are safe. You're in the safe zone because the house has, in fact, been deeded to you per your statements more than 5 years ago, and therefore
okay.
you're outside the look-back period, and the house will, in fact, be in your name, and it will not be in the estate of your mother. So, Billy, that's the answer to your question.
No, she has a life estate.
The life estate is not countable.
Okay.
And my second question is, she has a savings account and a checking account, and my sister and myself, our names are on the account also.
Right.
Now if in the scenario she has to go to a nursing home, will they take the entire contents of those two accounts?
They will.
Would they take just a third?
No, they will not look at the fact that they're titled also in the name of the children, because the source, the origin of those funds were your mother and father's. And Medicaid is going to look at the entirety of those accounts. Now, they're, you know, Billy, the answer to the question is that they're going to look at the entirety of the account. And so you've gotten the answer to your question. But there are certainly things that an elder law lawyer can help you do, you and your sister, so as to protect those monies.
Okay. All right. That's great. Well, that answers both my questions, and mm-hmm. I certainly do appreciate your time and the ability to call in and get
all
our
right.
questions answered.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Billy. Right,
we really do just have a second, just to follow up a bit with Billy's question.
Mm-hmm.
I know he was on the radio, so it can be distracting. He needs to know, I reiterate once again, that he seems to be safe relative to the property.
Mm-hmm.
But relative to the money, he is not.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain planning techniques that could be implemented now
right.
so as to protect that liquidity. Back to his question, some of our listeners might be saying, well, but Cecil, you know, why shouldn't we all just deed our house to our children? in his file and Billy's file, it looks like it's worked out okay.
He has a relationship with his sister. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he probably has a good relationship with his sister. Mm-hmm. He's a upstanding person. But to advise an elder person to deed their home to their child has its own set of risk. What if they are in a divorce? What if they have a large creditor? What if they go through a bankruptcy? Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that this house is titled in Billy's name.
Right.
So it's subject to Billy's twists and turns of life. Hopefully he hasn't had any. Mm-hmm. Okay. And therefore the house is secure.
Mm-hmm.
We would not, even though he's safe, and I had to answer his question directly, we would most likely not advise that parents just simply deed their property over to their children.
Right.
In fee simple title.
Real quick question here. With him holding that deed now, any monies that she has couldn't be spent on the house
while she's living. She has a life estate. So yes, in the event we need to spend money down on improving that home, then we may use it on that home.
Oh, it could, because she has a life estate.
That's correct.
Oh, that's the angle there.
That's right.
That's the right.
The last thing I would say to Billy is we really need to make sure that Mom has a good, solid power of attorney that allows for gifting, setting up trust, dealing with all aspects of her right. assets.
And God bless her, 93 years old, living on her own.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, if you want to find out more about what your options, legal options are, I want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins, Attorneys at Law, 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, 252-726-9050, and on the web at harvellandcollins.com.